Jerusalem. How I long for you.
Shalom, everyone. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And a couple of announcements. Number one, the Israel tour for September is filling up pretty fast. We're I think about 70% already. We've backed off the numbers. For a number of years we were taking as many as 30, 35, but through some conversations with Hanok, we've decided to drop that back to 25 now. And so that's going to give us a little bit more of a, a little bit more personal on the tour. It also allows us to get on and off the bus a little faster, which is nice. Be able to have lunches and things quicker. So if you're interested in joining us, go to connecttoisrael.com and you can sign up there. Information, itinerary, everything is there. So I'd get that done probably sooner than later. And do have a CD. I know it's been on the newsletter. It's I was going to do some different things this week, this month. And some things happened in our lives. I'm not going to go into the details there, since it is this broadcast all over the place. But Kathy's out of town right now, so I used an interview that I did with Mark David Smith of Messianic Lamb, and they're in my truck coming into the office. Kathy will be back Monday, so those will go in the mail very soon. If you're interested in supporting us, I don't know when the last time I've said this is, so you can go to joined2hashem.org, and we send out a monthly message either in CD format or digital format for those that are wanting to get, it's amazing. I had someone as a few months ago, they said, I just bought a new car. It doesn't have a CD player in it. I thought, wow. I remember when I put an 8-track player in my 64 Dodge Dart, and that was, we were big time in that day, right? We had an 8-track player. Then cassettes came out, and, just the thought of that, you want to walk around and on all fours, and it seems like ancient history, but things continue to change very, very fast. So we do have a way to just send it digital. And it saves us a little bit of postage, too. I don't know if you've noticed, but postage continues to go up. Let's get back into Philippians this week. I don't know about you. I'm enjoying these positive words of Shaul. As you know, I see that through the years, this happens to me. You go through ministry. I look back at, over 25 years now that I've been in, not just, teaching a Sunday school class. I mean, that started over 30 years ago, but over 25 years of ministry. And there's so many mixed emotions that happen within this. You see people that come to faith. And then all of a sudden, where are they the next day? Where'd they go? They said they made some proclamation of faith, and then their life goes out, they go crazy, but then there's those people that follow through, that continue in the walk. And so Shaul had to be dealing with some things within his own life. One day he's hearing about what is going on at Philippi. He's on top of the world. He's encouraged. And then the next day he gets a letter from Corinth. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. Get over yourselves. Move on. Okay? It's the same Messiah. What's the difference here? What's the difference between Galatians, Corinth, Ephesus, Philippi? It's the region, okay, whatever. Dirt is dirt, okay? It is people. Yeah, there's people. But each group is deciding what's going to happen to them. It comes down to this, their very basic attitude of who they are. of how they're going to walk. The congregation at Philippi made a decision, that, and we're going to get into a few of those things here in just a few moments. But see, the walk that we are living today is based not upon a different Messiah in each of us. The same Messiah is Messiah in Corinth, Ephesus, in Galatia, in Philippi. The difference is in the people's attitudes toward themselves, toward each other, their appreciation for the work of Elohim in their lives. That's what made the difference. So Shaul from that jail cell must have been like, okay, oh yeah, these guys. And then, so it was the congregation at Philippi that he focused on. He had to, just to keep his own sanity because of the things that were going on in these other places. So back to, let's go back to verse 21, a very familiar verse. It says, I almost read it in King James, right? For me, life is the Messiah, and death is gain. To live is Messiah, to die is gain. King James. That's how I memorize it. Let's just read a few verses. But if by living on in the body I can do fruitful work, then I don't know which to choose. I am caught in a dilemma. My desire is to go off and be with the Messiah. That is far better. But because of you, the greater need is to stay on in the body. Yes, I am convinced of this. So I know I will stay on with you in order to help you progress in the faith and have joy in it. Then through my being with you again, you will have even greater reason for boasting about Messiah Yeshua. Okay. To live is Messiah. To die is gain. We talked about that last week. Is that truly our attitude? What made the difference in Shaul's life that he could make a statement like that? That he could actually look at life and say that his desire was the kingdom. A greater desire he had to be with Messiah than to be upon, you know, in this world system. These are verses that have been taken out to, you know, I'll fly away, O glory. This statement is not about I'll fly away, but this is about your kingdom come, your will be done. Shaul was looking forward to the kingdom to come. Why? Because he had received a vision of that kingdom, a vision far greater than probably, you know, than most anybody has ever seen. But that does not put him in a separate category of, he saw this and this and this, and so that's why he can make those statements. No, each of us, walking in the revelation that has been given to us, should have a desire for his kingdom. So he says, for me to live is Messiah and to die is gain. I asked the question last week, what does that look like in our lives? I think that in some ways it is very similar. But the manifestation of that is possibly going to be different as it's walked out. How my life is, the things that I go through, that Kathy and I go through, it's going to be different than how it is manifested in your life. The end results are going to be the same. But because we're different people, our lives are going to be walked out in different ways. But here's a few things that are very similar in that Shaul said, for me to live is Messiah, to die is gain. So he was taking on the same attitudes toward life, toward the people, as Messiah was. What is it that separates us? Okay, I've used this example a couple times. What is it that separates us from other religions in this world? We've got Buddhism and Islam and, you know, and all these other things out there, Confucius and Confused and New Age and whatever. There's a couple things that separate us. Number one is that every religion in the world that I'm aware of is about man getting to or becoming Elohim. What we are following today, whether it be a form, you know, the root of what Christianity, and I know that, you know, that takes us to a different place here, but still we have, you know, numerous things in common. Where we're at today, we see that, I believe, and I've stated this very, very sternly, and I'll do this again, I believe that Yeshua is the manifestation of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh upon this earth. That Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, Elohim, the Creator, presented himself, to go back to some words used in the past, presented himself to us in the form of a human being, Yeshua. Interesting. Go back to, I'm reading through Proverbs, trying to read Proverbs every morning. Sometimes I get that, sometimes I don't. But go to Proverbs 8, chapter 8, and read verses 22 through 31. And tell me, who is this talking to? Who is this talking about? It's amazing, amazing verses. Speaking of Yeshua, who is the presentation of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh upon this earth, which says this to us, that we do not follow a religion that is trying to get to God, but one in which he came to us. That he reached down for us to bring us to him. Which brings us to another thing that separates us from other religions, and is this. That every religion says, okay, you do this. When you follow New Age, you have, you know, the leaders of New Age tell you to take your credit cards to Sedona, Arizona, and put them under rocks, and that's going to bring you wealth, and that's going to bring you all these things. And then you have, you know, we go into Catholicism, we can go into Islam, that, you know, you go and do this. You go and blow yourselves up, and you're going to have the 70 virgins or whatever. And, you know, it gets crazy and crazier and crazier. But we have one that we serve who said, follow me. Yeshua never said, just go do this. What did he do? He said, follow me. You ever had someone take a parent or someone in authority or maybe your boss or something along those ways, along those lines, and they just said to you, go do this, but you've never seen them do that? How much respect do you have for that person? How likely are you going to do that with the right attitude? But when you have a boss or a parent or a friend or a colleague or whoever that says, you follow me in doing this, you're going to respect them. You're going to follow them. This is the same thing that was told to Joshua. In Joshua chapter 1, Joshua, say that right, chapter 1, it says, you shall follow this Torah. It's the same principle, that we are to follow him, and that we are to do so in an unselfish way. Self-centeredness. Shaul would go on and talk as he wrote to Timothy, about a day coming of the last days in which people would be lovers of themselves. What does that mean? That people would become so self-involved, so me-centric, me-centered, that they would forget about how to even relate to other people. This is happening today. I talked to a friend of mine the other day, this person's a part of the millennial generation. And I have a real difficulty. Kathy's has a Facebook account now, because of some other things that we're involved in. But I've shied away from it. I haven't done Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, all those kind of things. Because I see it cheapening relationships. Think of it this way. The Almighty, in redemption, what would a redemption be if from the heavens he would have just sent an email or a text or a post on Facebook? If he'd have just, you know, posted on the you know, there's this show now, it really bugs me. I guess someone said it's not a bad program, but it just bugged, the title of it bugs me to no end. God friended me. Yeah, the truth is that God friended me. In sending Messiah, God friended me. But the problem I have with the title of the show, I've never seen the show, probably not going to see the show, I have better things in life to do, but the title of the show, to me, it cheapens. It cheapens the gospel. For God so loved the world, not the earth, not the dirt, but God so loved the people of this world that he instant messaged them on Facebook. Is that what it says? No. Folks, we need to be going against the tide, picking up the phone. And I was told by this person the other day, if I call someone on the phone, they're suspicious of what I might want. Really? Is that where we've come in society? I challenge you. I challenge you. Go against the flow. Go against the flow of that. Unselfish. Putting others before ourselves. But not just, Shaul would go on to say, do not do anything out of selfish desire. Yeshua said, become the servant of all. It's not just about being unselfish, but it's about being concerned for others. Do you know that you can be unselfish, but have no concern for other people? That you're not trying to make yourself the center of the world, but in doing so, you just kind of become that person sitting, you know, the wallflower we used to call the people. They're just sitting there. They're irrelevant. They have no desire for their own gain, but they have no desire for anyone else's gain too. We need to be interactive in people's lives, concerned about other people's lives. We need to take action in other people's lives. We need to believe in people, even when they don't believe in themselves. We need to believe in people. You know, if there's anything, I guess there would be a short list of things that I would like to be known for. One of those is that I picked up a phone and called somebody, which is a very unique thing in the day. But something I would really love to be known for is that I portrayed a sincere belief in people even before they believed in themselves. Because see, I look at it as in this way, that the creator of the universe believed in me before I believed in myself. Growing up, as even into my 20s, I was so insecure. So insecure in my life. And I know that some people say, I can't even imagine that. Yeah, you really, Kathy probably has a little bit of an idea of that because of our first years of marriage. But I was so insecure in my own life. But the Creator believed in me. And because He believed in me, I've learned how to believe in myself. And I want to do the same. I want to do the same with other people. I was talking with someone recently. Yeah, on the phone. Imagine that. Didn't send him a, instant message on Facebook. Though I now know how to, I know how to do that now. It's on Kathy's account, but I know how to do it. And as I was talking to this person, I said, my prayer has been for many years. I want to see people. Father, I want to see people like you see them. Do you know that's right on the edge of the same place as praying for patience? It is. Because when He answers that prayer, it's not always happy days. You see people, you begin to see people as He sees them. And it grieves you. Because He shows you, this is what He shows me in people. He shows me their potential. I see potential in people. I see potential for greatness in people. And when you reach out to that person, and you try to help them to achieve a new place of potential, and they come up with all kinds of excuses of why they can't get there. All kinds of, in their mind, reasons of why they can't get there. But you see it. I think that's one of the things Shaul probably understood as well as anyone outside of Messiah himself. Because he saw the potential in Philippi. He saw the potential in Galatia and in Corinth. The potential is there, equal in all places. But it was only one congregation that was reaching out for that potential. The others were figuring out reasons why they couldn't get there. A concern for other people. That means you're going to have to go out of your way. That means you're going to have to make some changes in your own life. To put other people first. No greater love does anyone have than this. That he would lay down his life for his friends. To be concerned about another person, not just leaving them in a place. Not just seeing someone hurting on the roadside and saying, oh, well, I can't do anything about that. I'm just driving on. But showing concern. Desiring fruit. He says, need to get back to the verse here. Where's the word? Where's the verse here? Forgot it. I can do a fruitful work, but if by living on in the body I can do fruitful work, then I don't know which I'll choose. He understood that when he ministered to Philippi, to the congregation at Philippi, it was about fruit. It was about him becoming fruitful so that others could become fruitful. I did a teaching the other day, some other teachings that I do outside of this, and I went out into the woods outside of my house, and I picked up a pine cone.
Jerusalem. How I long for you to be.
And I think of a pine cone. Okay, right here in front of me, a pine cone. When I picked this up last week, this pine cone was all closed up. It was wet, it was cold, it was actually a little bit moldy because it was sitting in the pine straw out there. And I asked on camera, I said, so when you look at this pine cone, what do you see? I was asking this question last weekend of someone. They said, well, I see a prickly thing. What do you see? When you look at a pine cone, what do you see? Do you see a decoration? Do you see prickly things? Do you see seeds? You know what's there in front of you? It's a forest. That's a forest. The manifestation of that forest has not happened yet. But there's a forest inside this pine cone. Over time, a forest can be manifested. Now, interesting enough, I brought this pine cone in. It's as I'm recording this, it's January. It's cold out. It's winter. And seeds do not sprout during the winter. Okay? It takes conditions. So I brought this pine cone in, and I was doing some teaching on it. I set it on my desk where it's, you know, 68 degrees in my office normally. You know what it did? It did exactly what a pine cone's designed to do. It began to open up. I didn't even notice it. It was sitting in front of my computer here. I didn't even notice it. I picked it up, and all of a sudden it was opening. Because that's what a pine cone is designed to do. I just picked it up a moment ago, and what's happening now is each one of these petals is starting to let go from the pine cone. What is that? It's a seed. It's a seed. It's actually a forest. Because in each seed, there's a forest. What's my point? My point is very, very simple. That this pine cone is doing exactly what it was designed to do. Produce seed. You and I are designed to produce seed. I guess I need to take this back outside and throw it out there so it can become a forest, because if I don't, if I throw it in the trash, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be nothing. That would be like hiding your gift. Oh, well, there's another teaching. So, Shaul was called by Messiah himself. The disciples were called. You and I are called. Okay? We go over to Matthew chapter 28, verses that we all should be able to pretty well quote. He says, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Go make people from all nations into Talmudim. It's what David Stern. Go into all the nations and turn people into disciples. Talmudim. What's he say? Go out and be fruitful so that you can produce more seed. Shaul was being fruitful. In his writing to the congregation at Philippi, the Kahal, the called out ones, he was being fruitful. Why? So that the congregation at Philippi could produce more seed. It's not about the fruit. It's about the seed. When you plant a garden in the spring and you put in your tomato plant, you go down to, you know, wherever, and you buy your little packet of seeds, and you put them in some soil, and you water them, and they come forth, and that plant grows, and all of a sudden you have little buds on there, and the next thing you know, you have a tomato, a little tiny green tomato. And it begins to grow, and it's producing, all of a sudden it's producing more tomatoes than you can eat. Why does it produce, why does one seed produce more tomatoes than you can eat? Because it's not, the seed is not about the fruit, it's about the seed. When we were in Oklahoma, Kathy had a, we had a garden there, and we planted this one cherry tomato, little yellow cherry tomato thing. This thing became huge. I mean, to the point that we had birds building a nest in this tomato plant. Never seen a tomato plant like that. And it just was fruitful. It was multiplying. It was like the thousand-fold tomato plant. And we kept picking. I'd go out there and just, you know, grab a handful and eat them. We couldn't eat them all. There was no way. The next year, I mean, we just kind of let it stay, okay? Winter came, the fall came, winter came, it quit producing. Those tomatoes, the little ones that were left there, they ended up drying out, falling off, and the next year, we had multiple tomato plants. Why? It wasn't about the fruit. It was about the seed. You and I were called to produce seed. In the midst of that, we're going to see fruit. But the fruit is going to be about passing on the seed to someone else so that they can produce seed and in the midst enjoy the fruit. Shaul was producing seed that would produce fruit, that would produce seed. His desire, it says, we go to finishing this up, then I am convinced of this, so I know I will stay on with you in order to help progress in the faith and have joy in it. Then through my being with you again, you will have a greater reason for boasting in Yeshua the Messiah. And what is the boasting? The boasting about what he is doing in our lives is to attract people to our fruit so that they can produce seed. Think about that. I mean, it's as Brad Scott would say, everything is right outside the window. It's no more difficult than that. We talked about that tomato plant there. I mean, I just talked about that tomato plant. I just boasted on the tomato plant because of the fruit that was being brought forth. We should be boasting about what the Father is doing in our lives. And maybe, just maybe, hold on, here's one that may get a little convicting here. Maybe if we're not seeing fruit, it's because we haven't been boasting on what he's given to us. Are we telling other people? Or keeping it for ourselves? This is an amazing thing to me. That a person, I have literally seen people that have come to faith, at least that was their confession, and refused to show it with anybody. That same person will go to a store and find the latest fishing lure, or, you know, latest, hottest, best off the market ammunition, or, you know, whatever women talk about, which I really don't want to know most of the time. That got me in trouble. But what you're excited about is what you will talk about. Many people never talk about their faith. Why? I wish I had an answer for that one. Maybe it's because they're just proclaiming something that they don't have. Could be. Maybe they're too timid because they haven't learned to boast. I was reminded of a verse this morning, early. This is about daylight. I was thinking about some different issues. And I didn't look it up, but it's in the prophets. It says that Yah that his eyes go to and fro, in good old King James English, to and fro over the whole earth to find those that he might show himself mighty through. I remember 30 years ago reading those verses. I don't have the capabilities of remembering where each verse was. I remember the verse, but I got to go back and look at where it's at and find it. And Eddie Chumney got all of that, you know, instead of me. That's okay, because we each have our gift. But I remember reading those verses that his eyes go to and fro over the whole earth to show himself mighty, to find those he may show himself mighty to. And I remember looking up to the heavens and saying this: may your eyes stop here. Father, I desire that you would have to look no further. No further than right here. You want to find somebody as unworthy as they may be, as flawed as they may be? He didn't say that he was looking to and fro over the whole earth to find those that would be perfect. He never said to walk before me and be perfect. He said walk before and be wholehearted. He's looking for people that are wholehearted. Because even in our imperfection, we bring glory unto him. I heard myself this morning praying that prayer again. If your eyes are still looking, if your eyes are still going back and forth over this earth to show yourself mighty through someone, may your eyes stop here. Maybe a good prayer to join me in. Verse 27. Only conduct your lives in a way worthy of the good news of the Messiah. Conduct yourselves in a way that lines up. But again, that does not mean that we have to be without blame, without sin, because we're not there. Right? That dog ain't going to hunt. We're not there. If you're listening to me from Belgium or something, you might not have gotten a hold of that one, but I'm not going to stop and explain it right now. Even in our failures, people should see Messiah. Even in our failures, even in our struggles, though I am weak, he is strong. Verses that, I mean, we can start quoting verses about this. That even in my weaknesses, his strength is shown. And this comes back to that I'm not bringing attention to myself, but unto him. That even in the struggles of life that we all face, he can be shown strong. I would like to take a little license here and translate it this way. Only conduct your lives in a way that lines up with the kingdom. Is our life lining up with what his words state? Is the life that we portray the life that we are? Think about those words. is the life that we portray to others the life that we are? Now, in counseling through the years with spouses, with children, I know that I would love to even not use the word majority, but it may be to that point, I don't know. But I know that many people, what their life is portrayed as outside of their home, their house, is not the life that it is inside. That their life when they are alone is different than their life in public. That's called hypocrisy. That's called being an actor. I guess that the best compliment that a person could give you, the greatest compliment that you could receive in life would be from your spouse or one of your children. That if they were given the opportunity to introduce you somewhere, that they would be able to say, the person you see in public is the person I see in private. Really not a greater compliment than that, folks. A life that lines up, so that whether I come and see you or hear about you from a distance, you stand firm, united in spirit, fighting with one accord for the faith in the good news, not frightened by anything the opposition does. Let's stop right there for a moment. First of all, that we would stand firm. How is our stand? Talked about this last week. Is our stand dependent on our circumstances? That when everything is going well, when our circumstances are good, our stand is good. I read a quote yesterday. I'm going back through a book called As a Man Thinketh. Very small book. It's pretty amazing book, though. Written, of course, off of the proverb, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. It said that a man's character is not shown in a man's character is not shown when everything is going well. A man's character is shown when the circumstances of life are trying to overwhelm him. How is our stand? Is it dependent upon our circumstances? That we are united. Looking for ways to unite. Staying away from things that, in my opinion, are absolutely silly. There's so much out there. I just was involved in a conversation yesterday about, I won't even go into what it was. But when someone sent me an email about regarding one of these conspiracy things out there, I opened the email and it was like, what's the point? What's the point? Going back to, you know, flat earth, round earth, pyramid, semicircle, octagon, hexagon, what's the point? What is the point in the end? In my opinion, there is none. As a friend of mine quoted, I am not concerned about the shape of the earth, but rather changing the condition of the world. Changing the condition of people's lives. That is what we should be concerned with. Standing united. Somebody wants to know, to believe the earth is flat. I can stand united with them. Interesting, right? I can. As long as that's not our focus. If our focus is on changing the condition of people's lives, I can stand next to a person that believes the earth is flat. It doesn't matter to me. It depends on what their focus is. Fighting with one accord for the faith. Understanding that what we are involved in, quote from many years ago, life is not a playground, it is a battleground. You and I were not placed here just to arbitrarily walk through life with no purpose. This is a battleground. And you and I are called to the fight, contending for, fighting for the faith that has been given to us. Not frightened by anything the opposition does. Oh, I listened last night to President Trump talking about the border wall. And then the two clowns, Schumer and Pelosi, talking about whatever they were talking about. I have no idea what those two were saying. I don't really know if I know what anybody was saying. But people are so today frightened by what is going on. We're to be confident, not frightened by what is going on around us today. It says, this will be for them an indication that they are headed for destruction and you for deliverance. And this is from Elohim. Let me stop right there, I think. Yeah, a couple minutes. It says that this will be an indication that people are headed for destruction and you for deliverance. Let me ask you a question. When we go through the battles of life, when we're contending for the faith, when we're living our life in that a life that lines up with the scriptures to the best of our ability, are there people that no longer talk to you because of your convictions? Are there people that no longer talk to you because of what you're doing? I have a relative that was in a different lifestyle, let's put it that. And as we were talking the other day, she was introducing me to someone and said, when she was in a different lifestyle, she said, she calls me Michael. Michael and his family, they never accepted who I was. And that made me uncomfortable. They also said, but now that I have gotten my life lined up with Elohim's ways, said he's the one that's accepting, and those other people are not. Why? Because our lives, when we're living our life, a life that lines up with his word, it should make someone uncomfortable. Are you comfortable with that? That when you follow Shabbat, when you follow the Torah, when you are celebrating Shabbat, entering into Shabbat, when you're not eating the pork chops, when you're not doing all those things, are you comfortable with the fact that you're going to make other people uncomfortable? If you're someone that just feels that you need to have everyone like you, or you're not anything, you're trying to please the wrong person. Our desire in life should only be to please one, and that is our Creator. If along the way I can help some others, change some others' lives, be concerned about others, help them to bring forth fruit and seed in their lives, and that's the proverbial icing on the cake. But when it comes down to it, there's only one that I will stand in front of in that day. And I'd rather him say, well done, good and faithful servant. I'd rather one say that on that day than a multitude say it on this day. Gotta go. Shavua Tov. Have a blessed, prosperous week. Bezrat Hashem. See you again next week. Till then, be strong.